This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751. Or send in your question through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. It's Nate G. here along with Dr. Doug Lyle. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing this evening?
Just terrific.
Fantastic. Well, we have a special guest today. Second time back, we have Dr. Jen Hawk, who's joining us again. Last time we had a really fun discussion with her about male-female dynamics, and Dr. Lyle revealed where she's from and a little bit about her background. So we'd like to welcome again Dr. Doug Lyle, Dr. Jen Hawk. And for those listeners who are interested in booking a consultation with Dr. Jen Hawk, you can reach her at www.jenhawk.com. So it's www.jenhawk.com. So Dr. Jen Hawk, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello. Absolutely. It's delightful to be here.
Notice, ladies first. Yeah? No?
Actually, ladies, we're not first. Pretty sure you were introduced first, and I'm the special guest, even though alphabetically Hawk comes well before Lyle.
That's freaking but great. Doug does come before yes. Jen, so, you know.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, but Gershfeld comes before everything, yeah. So really...
Nathan is all the way last, dang it.
Oh, my...
No status deficiency here whatsoever. We're all very comfortable with our given esteem dynamics. Clearly, doing really, really well. So,
all yeah. right.
Well, we've got some fun questions again on male-female dynamics and dating, and how women and men traverse the dating arena. So,
That is what I am equipped to talk about with my lady brain. It's good that we're talking about.
All right, dear doctors. I am.
Yeah.
We put Nate in the middle like a child in a divorce.
Yeah. Don't fight.
I don't like it when you fight. It makes me sad.
All right. Our listener asks, I am a 23-year-old single girl, and I need help with dating! Exclamation point. I would describe myself as a 9.
Oh.
I'm pretty and fit and educated and have a great job. Since I've graduated college, I have had an extremely difficult time with dating. Because I'm pretty, I have no problem attracting attention. Whether it's at work or out on a bar or out on a dating app, I'm constantly approached by men. We exchange numbers and things go terribly wrong. One pattern that was repeating is that the guy expresses his interest and texts me constantly. But he never asks me out. This can go on for months in some cases. Of the men that ask me out, there's absolutely no move to be physical. And to make matters worse, they leave the check sitting there until I offer to pay. And then they take me up on it. It doesn't matter if they are extremely good-looking and successful, or not so hot-looking and a couch potato. I can't find anyone that is interested in me. What is going on? Am I ever going to find a mate?
There's a word. It's a miscalibration.
Well, yes.
It's floating across my crystal ball. I don't know what it means.
It's actually interesting. Mm. And so let's play Sherlock Holmes. So let's look at this. So the person is fit, pretty, educated, self-described, has a great job, i.e. isn't a walking calamity train wreck that generally what I get attracted to.
did it. It's very, very big of you. Yeah, my brother, I'll just go ahead and throw my brother under the bus briefly. So my brother, once he's, sure. obviously he's past this stage now. His current girlfriend is just, you know, lovely and wonderful. But he had a period where he just dated crazy chicks. And I asked him, I'm like, you know, what's up with the crazy chicks? Like, why can't she get a grip on this? And he's like, they're just so full of life.
He's right.
Oh my!
Your brother's a wise man.
Oh yeah. All right.
Yes.
He is a very wise man. Yes. Yes. Oh, he's good. God. Good little pair.
I'm an aspiring horse.
Yes. Aspiring. Oh wow.
An aspiring horse.
That's we'll biggie
you,
and
we'll
Nate.
Get you a T-shirt really... that says that. Nate's going to be a horse when he grows
we'll
up.
We'll see. That's what they all say. That's such a cover.
Yeah. What did we talk about last time? Trying to tame bad boys.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
can't tame yourself either
enough salt,
Jimmy.
Then my face starts to look a little rounder.
Oh, so yeah.
Oh, there you go. It masks that like free raging testosterone that's behind the scenes there. So brilliant, very, very good strategy.
All right,
so she's not a calamity. We've established that she's not a calamity.
Sherlock,
she's attractive,
she's getting
the dates.
Interested in being approached.
They're approaching her, but then they're not making moves, and they're not buying her dinner.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The problem with this actually, folks, is when you get and Jen, who does counseling, one-on-one counseling, just as I do, the problem is that when people give you a story, and the story is actually not coherent. No.
It doesn't make sense. We'd have to ask a lot more questions because the story doesn't make sense.
Right.
If these things are really true and she's not a calamity and she is a nine and she's getting approached, it's indicating that something's going terribly wrong on the date itself. if all of those things hold true, either that's happening or we're just not getting the full background story, or there's massive miscalibration or narcissism and underestimation of attractiveness or something.
Yeah, it adds up so badly. It wouldn't be the case that, for example, men would take their number and then just text her but never ask her out. This is...
Mm-mm. Never want a Netflix and chill. Like, no, it doesn't make sense. Like, maybe she's being asked out and she's not perceiving that she's being asked out. Maybe they're propositioning her and she's not getting it. I don't know what it is, but it's not.
Yeah, the problem is that since it doesn't, since the data is not accurate, we can't really give this person any advice. Yes. Yes.
The EP computer shorts out.
EP computer is shorted out.
Does not compute.
What am I doing wrong? The first thing you have to do right is to actually collect some data that's truth. And then when you get back to us, then we might be able to help you. All right?
Yes, if you told us, you know, exactly, so, you know, walk us through exactly what one of these situations, how it happens. Like, who is the guy? How do you encounter each other? Did you meet at a bar? Did you meet on an app? How does he ask you out? Where do you meet? What do you talk about? What happens? And, like, we'd have to have all of those little constituent parts to make sense of it. Where certainly there could be all kinds of systematic things going on, which could be interesting.
Very good.
Can't
all right.
From here.
All right. Soldier on.
All right. Dear doctors,
dear Harvard doctor and the other guy. That's it.
The other guy. Where'd she go to school, Dr. Lewis? I've heard of it. It's somewhere on the East Coast, right? It's like a deep south somewhere.
All right, dear
Virginia
Harvard
Tech.
There you go. That's good.
Oh God.
Let's go.
All right. If I slept with someone that I like too soon, and they are showing less interest in me, is there a way to get their interest back? I remember one episode you mentioned, Dr. Lyle, looking your best was a way to do this, which I'm working on, losing some weight. Are there any psychological mind tactics that I can practice in the meantime? If someone's actively ignoring you, is it best to do the same thing and reciprocate ignoring them?
I'm going to let Jen have this. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, yeah. If you slept with him too soon and he's not interested in you, he's casual mating strategy. The casual mating strategy bell went off in his head, whether it was there from the beginning or not, and you do not qualify for pair bond in this moment. In principle, I suppose. This would be a question for the mansplainer on the show, but the in principle, if circumstances changed and you had a physical change and you lost a lot of weight and you were a different proposition for that CB at a point in the future, that he could potentially reevaluate the pair bond, and that you might qualify in the future if there was a significant change in that direction. But in the meantime, I would not do any of this kind of gamey stuff that you're hinting at here in terms of ignoring back or anything like that. I would just focus on making yourself as competitive as possible and, you know, seeing what happens in that relationship, but not investing too much in it in the meantime in any kind of gamey sort of sense. That would be my take on it. And not to expect that anything is ever going to happen in terms of convincing this guy that you qualify for a pair bond, because he kind of already tested that out and you were casual mating material and that's the end of the story most of the time.
But if you pay a lot of money to some of these dating coach ladies, they watched Star Wars very carefully and there's Jedi mind tricks.
Maybe I should hire one of them because I'm not aware of these Jedi mind tricks. It's like this casual mating strategy never happened. I am the pair bond you're looking for.
That's beautiful. All right, that's perfect. Yeah, go ahead, Nathan.
Well, so I've got these psychological mind tactics. Like, I've heard this a lot growing up from different women that either I've dated or have just been in my life, and that they believe that the rules that they can somehow manipulate the situation, and that the most successful women married to the most successful men are the ones who are, you know, pull the guy like a puppet on the strings. You know, even there's a movie my family really liked called The Big Fat Greek Wedding, and the one of the quotes in there was, the wife of the husband, wife of the patriarch of the family says, "Well, yeah, you're the head of the family, but I'm the neck, and so I move the head wherever I want it to go." So the disagreeable streak in me has always find that a little bit irritating.
Disagreeable.
But I wonder if there's any truth to it.
Well, here's what I would say, that the nature of marketing and advertising is to try to you have to understand, in other words, you're designing,
oversell.
You're competing in a marketplace where everybody's overselling, and so everybody's discounting the messages that they get, and you're in a game theory, you know, hard push nightmare, whether you're selling dodge darts or you're selling refrigerators. It's all the same.
Right.
New, better, improved, better than the other guys, 10% off. So this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, you're going to get, there's always a possibility that you can somehow manipulate somebody out of an estimation of you by a few percentage points for a short period of time. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sure. You definitely
of course.
Can. But you're going to pay the toll
yes.
for that later.
And so the truth is in this situation, as Jen was saying, the truth is already out. You know, so the situation is you're not going to be tricking someone who's already assessed you very effectively. That's going to be out mm-hmm. the door. So the best time for that kind of chicanery is early. And even if you pull it off, it's not going to stick, because we're talking about getting people to the altar with $50,000 wedding investment and giving away the casual mating strategy for the rest of his life. We're not talking about selling a hamburger or a beer that says less filling tastes great. This is all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just
slightly
ridiculous
larger investment
to think that people could pull this off. Not that it sometimes can't be if you put your harpoon in just the right highly agreeable, highly conscientious mm-hmm. sap.
If he's a grab, yes, yes, exactly. I think that's when people have these success stories, or the women of the rules or whatever. It's because she was disagreeable and she had a lot of push and she was able to play these games. It wasn't the nature of the games themselves. It was the fact that they had the right mark. They had a sap, and dragged him all the way to the altar. And is that a relationship that you want to be in for the rest of your life? Do you want to be, you know, dealing with the psychological burden of knowing that you did that and that's the way that you got there? Well, if you're a narcissistic, disagreeable woman who was willing to play those games to get there, then maybe you are. But if you're not, and you're trying to strategically use these psychological mind games to secure some kind of short-term outcome, then you're not going to be able to sustain what you get as a result of those games over the long term without feeling a lot of dissonance about it and a lot of unhappiness as a result.
Absolutely.
So not to recommend it.
That answered my question in every which possible way.
Good. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, you'll be a pair bonder.
All this trauma in my life has caused all these problems. So, you know, finally you're undoing this.
Oh, Hey, where's the horn?
Where's the horn?
Oh, I don't have the horn. We need the stop it horn.
All right. Okay. Dear Dr. One of you.
Yes. Yeah.
I have a question regarding the full moon on the female psyche. I think this is one's for Dr. Hawk.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question regarding the full moon on the female psyche. The mother of my two children becomes more abusive and more unstable during a full moon. Generally, she is a pretty tricky person to deal with, and tripping over some pretty little trap opens. Tripping over some petty little trap opens a gate for verbal and sometimes physical abuse. She often blames the full moon or PMS for these episodes, but she's rarely a picnic in the park in between. I think she's quite open to new experience as she ritually puts her crystal collection out for cleansing in the full moon, takes relationship advice from her psychic, and sends me lists of pop psychology articles to tell me where I'm going wrong. My question is whether there is any validity to the claim that the full moon has on anyone's psychology. Or is it just an excuse for bad behavior and just some new age hippie nonsense for people who are high in openness?
Well, this is a fascinating question for about six different reasons. We can have fun with Jen's answer, and then I can answer, or I can answer, and then Jen can have fun, or whatever we want to do.
Oh. I see how this whole rhythm is going to go. So I'm the sideshow that just gives a little bit of entertainment, but the real science comes from the mansplainer. Yeah. That's how this works. Okay, got it. Yeah. Well, I some of the listeners may know this, some of them may not, but I have what Dr. Lyle likes to give me a lot of crap about. He calls it a mystic chip. So a mystic chip is just that I'm high in openness on the big five, and I'm very open-minded, and in my past life, my past life here on Earth in this lifetime, I have been very interested in these kinds of ideas. And I actually worked as an astrologer for many years, which I now look back on as just reflective of my longstanding interest in individual differences. So it was always there. I just really misinterpreted and had the wrong venue for that kind of interest. But I think a lot of the time, this kind of situation, I mean, the question is really revealing the true nature of the query, the way that he's saying, oh, she's rarely a picnic in between, and she's using this as an excuse. That this is fundamentally what's going on. You've got kind of an open, potentially unstable, disagreeable person who is using the full moon as a permission engine to behave more badly than usual. There's nothing causal going on with the moon that's affecting her hormones or anything like that. It's that she you'll see this reflected in all kinds of aggregate sociological crime data and everything else, that it's not, the moon's not making people crazy, but it's giving them permission to behave in crazier ways. So there's sort of the cost of doing so is just becomes lower for that collective moment. And that's my take on generally what's happening here, despite the fact that I have a fully functioning mystic chip, and would otherwise be very sympathetic to these claims. But in this case, I'm going to have to reject them.
And how often do you cleanse them?
I literally do have crystals and rocks that I have purified under full moon. So it's, I know what of I speak with this question, but you know, not for many, many, many years. So my crystal collection has taken a deep yeah. decline.
Yeah, since superb. Just absolutely fabulous answer. Super, super. And yeah, that's it. That she's nailed it.
Oh, no. You're not going to give the scientific answer?
That's really, really good job.
Oh, all right. Well,
all right.
All right. Fantastic. So, dear doctors, I just finished reading a book by David Buss, and there was a part about mate stalking that really stuck out to me. He mentioned that men who were rejected by a more attractive female were much more likely to stalk the female within 6 months of the breakup. So what advice would you give to a female who's being stalked?
well, there's a couple of things. There's a few different things come to mind. So one of the, obviously we have to have a lot of detail about what's the nature of the stalking. So how dangerous does it look? How aggressive is it? How law-breaking is it? These are all components of this. I would bring in the law, and yes.
Yeah, I mean if it's
so you're
going
to want to bring
definitely.
In the law. Yeah, if it's sufficiently aggressive. Even if it's not, if you're not sure and it's sort of on the line and it seems like he's walking back and forth over a line, I would bring in the law just because I want him intimidated and I want it on record. So even if you were to seek a restraining order and it was denied, the point is that he's now highly sensitized and realizes it will probably be granted. Particularly if it's a limited restraining order for certain things, you know, social media, phone contact, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is mostly is probably going to be, I think, you know, that is often the form that these things take, is that it's just online harassment and these guys aren't very often showing up at someone's door and trying to break in. So it's a lot of online harassment. So restraining order is much
and so that's where we go with that. And so if we're talking about something where the male in question has a more aggressive history, if there's been an abusive history with the specific woman, you know, how stable or unstable is that personality, and how disagreeable, etc., how violent, what the violence history is, these are all features that go into the calculation. So just in my history, I've had to deal with quite a bit of this, and you know, I did 15 years in criminal justice psychology, so I've seen many cases on both sides of this, and for example, so it goes all the way from essentially we begin by never. This is another aspect answer to this question, which is that. If you're a reasonable person and it turns out that your ex is actually quite disagreeable and therefore, you know, pursuing you knows intuitively by the person, his genetics down deep, that he's over-rewarded. He may not feel over-rewarded because he's disagreeable. He feels like he deserves you. But he knows there's neural circuits in there where he knows that you're a prize. And so he also knows that he got to that prize. And so he knows intuitively that if he's been to the well, he's had sex with this female multiple times and had a relationship with her, then there's a very good chance that he can reestablish it. And so he knows that the way to do this is to make the cost of not being with him so great that even though the benefit of being with him may be small, it's just worth it to just get rid of the harassment. So this is actually the blunt instrument of male wooing at this level with a highly disagreeable, over-rewarded, you know, low conscientious shithead male. That's what it is. That's literally what they're doing. And behind it, oftentimes, there's a latent serious threat of violence that sits behind the engine. And so it all depends what, you know, what are all the constellation of factors. So this goes, it begins on one end where the guy is actually very civilized, but he's obsessing, and he's just, he's pretty decent human with a decent job, decent intelligence, decent, as impulse control, and he just can't kind of let it go. No problem. You don't talk to him. You know, you set the deadline down. You say, listen, we're moving on, and I'm not going to answer any of your email, and I'm not going to answer the phone when you call, and I'm going to block your number, and that's that. And if you ever call around a block number and I hear your voice, I'm going to hang up, and it's not personal. This is just how it has to go. You need to move on. You're a great person, okay? And there's somebody perfect out there for you, and but it's just not me, not right now. I've got issues I'm working on. I.e., this is crazy girlfriend, crazy boyfriend, right off my website.
This is one of the important points. That a lot of it is the way that you reject the guy. Like you're making this a, yes, you know, it's not you, it's me, I have problems, kind of like you're protecting his esteem in this process as much as possible.
Yes.
This is politically incorrect advice, obviously, but you can head off a lot of this kind of behavior at the pass if you are careful enough with the rejection process that you're not unnecessarily initiating this sequence of stalking that you would if you were had a harder edge to it.
Yes.
And he had more.
And
of
you're
a,
also signaling
in the process
that it's also a useful signal to say that you're telling your friends or your mother or somebody about how great he is, but it's just not the right time for you. Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're essentially telling
exactly.
him
it's
that
really,
you are
really good.
Giving him
yeah.
good kudos in the village. So then he's got something to lose, even though he's losing mm-hmm. the relationship. He's got something more to lose if he loses this. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So
got
this is part of the equation. So
yeah.
It's very good chance that a lot of people we can dust off this way. But if you can't, then we have to, you know, if it's more tenacious and potentially more dangerous, we have to bring in the law. And then all the way to the most severe case I've had, the person had to move and change her identity. Okay. And she had to literally, we planned very, very methodically and carefully that one day she was going to disappear off the face of the earth. And she was not going to be found. Okay?
Wow.
And she had the resources and she had the family support. Everybody knew that this was a dynamite, very dangerous situation. And this was the right thing to do. Okay? So the answer to the question is, it's a huge range of how it is that we walk this walk, depending upon what it looks like, from the very beginning of crazy girlfriend, crazy boyfriend rejection strategy to more heavy-handed strategies, all the way to save your life. So those are the long answer to a problematic question. Yeah,
fascinating. I mean, I've obviously dated girls that have been, you know, I've felt overrewarded and been dumped and all that stuff, but just never felt like I'd want to stalk them or anything like that. I just couldn't understand that. But you just
yeah.
described it very, very perfectly. Now I kind of get it. They're trying to up the cost of basically
yes.
breaking ties.
Right.
And it kind of, it's an interesting game theory perspective,
yes.
strategy, you know, it's,
yeah.
mm-hmm. And the village piece is really important because in my experience, the guys that go the craziest are the
yes.
ones who are feeling that status loss in the whole village. So it's the woman talking smack about them in the village, and the fact that they don't just lose her, it's that their reputation has been damaged, you know, more broadly than that often will push them over into the really aggressive, crazy realm. Not always. Sometimes it is this over-rewarded dynamic and they just snap in that direction. But I think the village component
and
in managing that is carefully.
When the male feels that
really
status
important.
Hit, or anyone feels that status hit, and now they want to respond with violence, is this simply a signal to other people, like a warning, hey, don't do this, otherwise this will happen to you? Or what's...
Well, for one thing, it's a warning to the individual that if you don't do what it is that I want you to do, I may kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's also the possibility that they, if they, an interesting question in evolutionary psychology is, why did these some guys sometimes actually kill these women, which they do with fairly high regularity in these situations. And we believe the answer is that that is meant to be a threat to the other women in the village.
Mm-hmm. Don't cross me.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, yeah. That she's making an example.
Obviously super disagreeable, low conscientious, mm-hmm. you know, just incredibly shitty humans playing those strategies. But hey, you know, Joseph Stalin walked the earth and so did Hitler. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are people out there that are effectively their equivalents.
And I appreciate... No, go ahead. Go ahead, doctor.
But this, those things are... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nate. Just, doctor, just the fact that these guys, if they are that disagreeable and they do have that instability in them, they're probably flagging that to some degree over the course of the relationship, which, so you, before you reject them, you're going to know that you want to reject them. And so to whatever degree possible, you want to game out that rejection in the way that we're talking about, and really make a plan and script it out and figure out your contingency plan and what you're going to say to the guy, because it's not like, you know, he's a super sweetheart and you dump him and then he flips and goes crazy. Like you will see some signs and some flags. That's the reason that you're probably rejecting him. So just another reason to not try to convert.
Well said.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys.
No.
Horace isn't going to stop
you. Guys answering this question, because it's kind of tough to talk about the dark sides of humanity from this perspective, and it's nice to to have that addressed with evolutionary psychology. We have to talk about it just so that you know, I guess my overestimation of the worst case scenarios, we always want to know what these things are. So it's very nice to hear that.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, other the dark side of the bell curves out there walking among us. I mean, there are a lot of really low conscientious, really unstable, really disagreeable people out there, and you start mixing those qualities together, and that's a bad situation.
Yet another reason to do the 10-paid dates so that you can weed that out as well. And
Yeah, and to start out a little under-rewarded in the 10-paid dates process as a female, so you're not blinded by the over-rewarded process and willing to overlook those flags.
Yes.
Those rose-colored over-rewarded glasses. Watch out for those.
Girls that I've met who are in this trap to say, but I love him.
Oh, but he has so much potential.
All right, our next question. I've recently gone through a divorce, and it's been recommended for me to stay out of a new relationship for at least a year. So I've been wondering, in the Stone Age, how long would a woman be single for after a breakup?
A couple days.
Yeah, how hot is she?
Yeah. Actually, if she was hot, she was probably coached out of the relationship.
Not long.
So, yeah, this is all... dependent.
Yeah.
And the notion of, oh, you should stay out for a year is just wives' tale nonsense.
You go, this, well, it's also ego trap nonsense a lot of the times. Like, oh, I have to work on myself. You know, you hear this very often from women that, oh, I'm happier being single because I really want this time to work on myself and, you know, rediscover my own interests and all of this kind of stuff. So sometimes that can be true to some degree, but a lot of times that's just a form of the ego trap or a variation of the enlightenment trap, where they are intimidated by the competitive problem facing them because they've gotten out of a long-term relationship and they're looking at the market and they're not sure how they're going to fare out there. And so it might be a little better to take some time and work on yourself and broadcast that to the village, that you're not looking for someone.
Yeah, boy,
right,
that's
now.
Good.
You know, you're not interested in romance.
I didn't catch that. That's really, really good. Great. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not a chick.
Yeah, very good. All right. Yeah. All right. What do we got?
All right. Our next question is disgust related to conscientiousness? And is it what drives the, quote, creepiness factor that's perceived from what I think is an unwanted sexual advance?
It's not conscientiousness, honey. you don't want his genes.
Yeah. Disgust actually evolved as an emotion from taste. And so it evolved as it's an adaptation to, and it's probably emotional and gives rise to very recognizable emotional expression. so that the village can be warned to not eat the same thing that I just took a bite out of. Okay.
Yes, if all of you listeners have never seen Dr. Lyle do this physical mimicry of what the disgust reaction looks like, you're really missing out, because it's quite a a performance.
That's what it is.
It's an interpretive dance, really, of disgust.
So that's what that is. And so you've got contagion processes that are super useful for humans. Like if we start talking about itching now, you'll start to feel itchy. If you see someone start itching, you'll start to feel itching. That's because obviously it's a statistical improvement over your own sensory system to start to have effectively a mirror neuron driven experience that if they're getting bit, I might be getting bit and I don't know it yet. And so you're going to start to then sensitize yourself to possible things where parasites might be biting you. So in the same vein, a disgust reaction, when you see somebody have a disgust reaction, you start to have a mirror neuron mimic. In other words, that's in the system. So these are, and you see it obviously really strongly around food. So if you even watch in a movie and someone has a really disgust reaction, you start feeling that internal rejection of that food, you know, for them. And that's where disgust reactions, we believe, started in evolution. And then they're going to drive we actually will say things like, the guy's just not my taste. Okay? So even in our language, we're weaving it around that same principle. So that's what's going on, i.e., as Jen says, you know, you don't want his genes. You're smelling and seeing and looking at gene quality that you feel like is significantly inferior to your own, and you're having a guard the eggs, no way, you know, reaction.
Very, very useful information. And it can come in later too. I mean, you can be sort of, you'll hear about the disgust switch, or the sort of like process that you kind of are really into somebody and then suddenly they repulse you. And so that's some piece of information that's come in one sensory direction or another. And you probably don't know what it is consciously, but you got some information that they have, you know, that their immune system is not suitable for your immune system, or there's something going on there that's just no go.
Yeah, really
so
interesting.
Disgust is a valuable cue.
Where I think there's two places where I see this, and they're at the heart of the sort of the human romantic equation, and that is that if either partner has a disgust reaction to the other one's character, you're done. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're done. It's never coming back from that. Never.
Right.
Never. This is why Gottman talks about the four horsemen, you know, that disgust kind of contempt idea. I don't think you can come back from that. Once disgust
now,
is initiated, you're done.
Be careful with everybody that's listening. Yeah. That doesn't mean that you might not have a disgust reaction about a partner in a given narrow context. But if it's
no, this is a global sense that you just can't even stand to look at the person or listen to them eat, or, you know, like that whole kind of thing where you just like you find yourself just developing hives in their presence.
Yeah.
That'll happen to people. And that's, I don't think you can come back from that, no matter how much you learn to communicate and you work on your relationship and you drag them to therapy. Yeah. Like, it's not going to fix that fundamental whatever's going on there, because it might be partly physical. It might be that they just absolutely don't qualify on some characterological dimension, but whatever it is, it's valuable information that's telling you to cut your losses. Even if they wear the right crystals and they charge them under the full moon and the Scorpio moon in particular, and they had it all sorted out and it was blessed by a shaman and everything.
Years ago, a male decided to put together two different Tinder accounts. One was some really hot, you know, good looking athlete, and the other one was just like a normal, you know, software engineer type of personality. And not that software engineers can't be. I just offended all the software engineers, but
I'm detecting a revolution. There are going to be torches at your door at the Fasting Escape.
Fair,
we heard what you said about us.
An engineer. Yeah.
We're shutting off your internet.
I went to school as an engineer, so I guess I'm part of in that category. But
okay. Got it. Oh, that's a good bit to mark in your horse camp.
So this guy decides to say the same opening lines to all the females that he matches with. And with the super hot guy, he can say the most vulgar things that he can possibly come up with.
Yes.
And the women are just laughing and joking and saying, oh, yeah, no worries, but can't we at least get coffee first or something? Whereas with the Horace-y type of personality, they're saying he's getting reported by Tinder for sexual harassment and he's creepy and ridiculous. And so, what we're just basically saying is they don't like their genes. And so, therefore, they just feel that disgust.
They don't like the it's a holistic assessment of that individual. So you're willing to kind of let the hotness compensate for the disgust reaction that you would have with the disgusting thing that they're saying in some cases, not universally, but certainly in some cases, because you're taking that person as a genetic impressionistic experience. You're not just looking at a photo and deciding. You're deciding on many levels: smell, proximity, just the whole experience.
There's actually a really
predict this stuff.
Nicely done official instructional video on this that was done by Saturday Night Live.
And I had a feeling.
That's right. And it's an instructional
fine
video.
Scholars at Saturday Night Live. Did they go to UVA?
Oh, boy. And it turns out it's an instructional video on sexual harassment. Yes. And it's Tom Brady and Mike Myers.
Oh, this is really good, actually.
So
I've seen this
for anybody that hasn't seen
hilarious.
It, it's very clear that the instructions are clear. The really
it's
important
really
thing is, number one,
very
be
rigorous social psychology.
And number two, be handsome. And number three, don't be unattractive. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, follow all three of those rules and you're good to go.
All right. What do you got?
Let's take one more, the one right below the makeup question. Because this one's about toxic masculinity. So I thought Dr. Jen Hawk would have a good time with this one. Okay. Dear Dr. Hawk and Dr. Lyle, notice how I got the order right this time.
You got it right
to
that
me,
time.
It seems
good job. Good
that
job,
masculinity
Horace.
Masculinity is for men and feminism is for women. Men use masculine qualities to climb the dominance hierarchy to get status, better females, or a shot at promiscuity. Whilst feminism means equal opportunity for females, females could simply pair bond with a provisioning male, or they can enter the workforce and climb the dominance hierarchy as well if they so choose. And obviously, they should be free and encouraged to do so, being free of interference. Lately, however, I've seen a lot of feminists openly encourage female promiscuity, females getting quotas in the workforce, whilst simultaneously suggesting we need to rid our boys of toxic masculinity, ending the patriarchy and encouraging fat acceptance movements and lower beauty standards. Is it reasonable to suggest that modern third-wave feminism is now about confusing males about the dominance hierarchy and their own sexual selection criteria so as to turn them into being beta males?
It's got so much swirling stuff in there, but this is just right up Jen's alley. She lived it. She lived in the Ivy League.
So much. I did. In fact, I lived in the Ivy League and my whole journey toward evolutionary psychology had to come by way of my whole smash the patriarchy stage, you know. So you have to go through the smash the patriarchy stage and then come to terms with the sort of inherent misogynistic flavor of evolutionary psychology and somehow reconcile that with your feminism. So it's a whole process. I'm still in the grips of it. But this, I my general take on that, you hear a lot of this kind of thing, like, oh, is it, you know, is feminism now about doing this and confusing hierarchies and turning men into beta males? This is conspiracy thinking that's giving way too much collective credit to any particular, this is all being run on particular cost-benefit analyses. These are individuals who are running specific CBs about their competitive problems. And so if you're watching this happen with a lot of women at once, it seems like it's a big social movement, and maybe the cost of participating in that social movement has been lowered because more people are doing it. But really what's going on is that there is a CB at the individual level about being intimidated by competitive problems and embracing these kinds of cover stories of toxic masculinity and the patriarchy and fat acceptance and all this kind of stuff to be a smokescreen to protect oneself from those competitive problems. That's the general take on that. I mean, there's a lot going on in that question. So, but I think to ascribe any of it to some sort of orchestrated conspiracy theory coming out of the far left or out of academia or anything like that is to give those
makes sense
people
to me.
Too much credit.
When I came of age in the 1970s, so that's what? How long ago is that? A long time, 45 years ago, and so
40 years.
Certainly,
yes.
culture nudges along towards things that are usually generally more sensible. Some important incremental changes take place in human thinking, and so. Let's face it, if we were to see advertising and watch the shows of 1960, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Oh, the
really
horror.
Did. Yeah.
The toxic masculinity runs rampant. I mean, they're even these kids today they're up in arms about, shows during the 90s. So there's a big movement to, we need to this cancel culture on things. We need to cancel Friends. We need to cancel Seinfeld. Like these shows, these pivotal shows, even that recently were too representative of toxic masculinity and patriarchal thinking and gender heteronormativity and all of these things that are unacceptable.
Right. I mean,
it's not even that.
Complaining,
we don't even have to go back for years.
That is there. The truth is, from my eyeball judgment, now 45 years post my own, high school coming of age process, I don't see much change in human nature at all. No, it's essentially by 19,
there,
you know,
no,
by where
not.
I was in middle class America in the mid 1970s, we had pretty well absorbed feminism. In other words, it's like, God, the girls are smart. They can major in what they want, and they can beat us at math. And it's like, hey, it is what it is. A lot of people, a lot of young women started going to law school, and it was no longer shocking at all. And so there was a process by which this happened for many and sordid reasons that we could trace. However, by the time I'm there, 76, trying to get a date, hey, if you're a guy, you want to have a nice car, you want to have some money, you want to be athletic, and you want to be handsome and dance. And guess what? Nothing has changed. Yes.
Still holds. Still the same exact situation. This is the human condition. But now we have extra narratives that have been imported from postmodernism and from far left and wherever else they're coming from that plug conveniently into competitive avoidance. So that's like that for anybody who is looking at that problem, this problem of human nature, as long as there have been humans, of finding the best mate you qualify for and everything else, then they're searching around for the most socially acceptable, expedient excuses to not participate fully in that competition. And now we have a wider repertoire of those excuses. And this is basically what all of this is. It doesn't mean that reality has changed. It doesn't mean that there's some big orchestrated conspiracy. It just means that individuals executing specific individual CBs
bitching
on competitive avoidance have more options
whining.
Available to them.
It used to be, guys just don't appreciate smart women. Like that was the line I heard in 1980.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that true?
I think that's totally true.
They're intimidated.
That's the
They're
first time I heard
women.
That was about 1979. And of course, I'm thinking, really? There's a girl across the room that's smoking me in science, and guess what?
Yeah.
I date her in a heartbeat, but I'm intimidated. So, yeah, I appreciate that bridge is fine.
See? Proves the point.
So, yeah, but this is exactly competitive avoidance and intimidation by this and smoke screening and status defense. Yeah, this is the these are the extraordinary sensitivities and knowledge that Jen Hawk brings to my attention and to our discussions in Esteem Dynamics. And I really look forward to hearing more of your thinking, Jen, about all these things. Yeah.
It's Dr. Hawk, actually.
Oh, man. All right. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Oh, or is that too intimidating?
Well, Dr. Hawk, it's been a pleasure having you on for these last two shows. We are looking forward to talking with you in great detail in many, many more
pleasure
shows.
Pleasure is all
and
mine.
Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for making this connection and having Dr. Hawk on. And we really appreciate it. Our listeners have been waiting a long time to listen to Dr. Hawk on this show. So we're really looking forward to hearing more.
Oh, well, it's lovely to be here. So I look forward to coming back again.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.